Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 58 of the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and each week here on the Instructional Leadership Show, it's our mission to help you confidently get into classrooms every day, have feedback conversations that change teacher practice, and discover your best opportunities for school improvement. And in this episode, we are going to talk about becoming a conversation and thought partner to teachers. So as we go along, I would love to have your reflections and feel free to reach out to me with your thoughts on this, of how we can become a conversation and thought partner to teachers so that we're able to change teacher practice. So as I mentioned just a moment ago, every week on this show, we talk about changing teacher practice and we emphasize some aspect of getting into classrooms and having conversations with teachers. But obviously for the rest of this school year, for almost everyone, physically getting into classrooms is basically not possible, and getting into classrooms virtually may be possible to some extent. But mostly what we need to do is have conversations. So we're actually going to reimagine our 500 classrooms theme a little bit and address the essential question of how we can become a thought partner. How can we shift our role from simply being a feedback provider into one of actually being a thought partner with each teacher that we work with? So I'm assuming that you are in some sort of instructional leadership role, perhaps as an administrator or an instructional coach. Maybe you're a school-based coach or a centrally based coach that works with multiple schools. Maybe you're a principal or assistant principal, or maybe you are looking to become one in the coming year. I am of the belief that it is our job as instructional leaders to have feedback conversations that change teacher practice. But often we see that feedback in the wrong way. People think about feedback as something that is delivered one way. You know, that if I think it's my job to simply come up with the right feedback and then transfer that to the teacher so that the teacher stops making the same mistakes and makes better decisions in the future. If I think that it's my role simply to provide that information, I think we're missing a big part of the point and a big part of the mechanism for how we impact teacher practice. And I would suggest that if we want to reimagine our role, if we want to have the maximum impact, one of the best things we could do, especially in this moment in history that we are living through, is to shift our focus from simply being there and providing feedback into a focus on conversations. So for many years, we've used the hashtag 500 classrooms. I want to propose to you today the hashtag 500 conversations, because I believe there has never been a more critical time for us to have professional conversations with the professionals that we work with. And those conversations can focus on a number of different topics. They can take a number of different forms. But one thing that I think we all need lots of these days, we all need a lot of help just kind of making sense of what's going on, making sense of maybe new policies that are coming out, new plans that are coming out. Perhaps you've been told to develop multiple plans for different scenarios, different outcomes that may occur. And often those plans are made by people who don't actually have to implement them. You know, the decision makers are not the doers in public education typically. So often you're getting directives from your superintendent, from state public health officials, from all kinds of people who don't really have to worry too much about the details of implementing whatever it is that you're telling, that they're telling you to do. And that puts you in the role, that puts frontline educators in the role of having to make sense of it all and having to process it and figure out, okay, well, if these are the guidelines, how do we do that and still do what we're here to do? How can we possibly make this all work? There's a lot of that. Are you going through that right now in your own life and in your profession of like, how do we possibly make this work? How do we make sense of it? I think that is one of our biggest needs socially, you know, is to make sense of what's going on and what's coming next together through conversation, and to just process it and to just kind of think out loud in partnership with our colleagues. And of course, that sense making and that processing are so important, because we have to make lots of decisions, right? There are all kinds of decisions we have to make about scheduling and how we're going to get students into classrooms and space out the desks and what curriculum is going to look like and what instruction is going to look like. And, you know, can you do a turn and talk? You know, there are all these different things that we have got to figure out that are frankly not easy. And only through conversation can we make those decisions. So I think the third major reason conversations are so important in this particular season is simply the sheer number of new decisions that we have to make. But of course, decision making is not something that is unique to this unique time, this pandemic that's going on right now at the time we're recording this. Decision making really is at the heart of teaching. I think what's unique now, what's different now, is that we're having to make decisions not about best practice, not about how to do the very best for students, but about how to do the best we can under the circumstances. In other words, decisions about compromises, where we're not going to be happy with any of the outcomes completely. We're not going to be able to achieve outcomes for our students that we are thrilled with. It's all about doing the best we can under the circumstances. And that, of course, is all about making compromises. So this is a focus. This focus on conversations rather than simply providing feedback, I think, is one that can get us through this time, but it's also one that can carry us forward and serve us long term if our goal is to change teacher practice, right? If it's our goal to simply go through the motions and say, hey, I was in your classroom, I'm required to give you some feedback, so here's some feedback, good luck with that, see you later. If that's our goal, you know, if our goal is just to meet the formal requirements and to treat feedback as a formality, well, then I guess we can do that. But if our goal is really to change teacher practice, we've got to think about what kinds of conversations actually lead to change. So think in your own life for a moment, if you would. What conversations in your life have led you to make changes? Maybe you've had a conversation with your dad about politics back in the day. Maybe you have a conversation with a coworker about religion. Maybe you have a conversation with a relative. Maybe you have a cousin who's a teacher and you have a conversation with your cousin about pedagogy. And all of those different conversations we have with people that we care about and whose opinions we respect are what ultimately lead us to change our beliefs and our opinions and ultimately our practice. It's not simply learning about best practice, reading it in an article, and then applying it that leads to change. It's conversation with people that we care about and trust. So when I think about our role as instructional leaders, I realize that we have a big opportunity there. And I hope you're seeing that opportunity as well for us as instructional leaders to play that role of thought partner and to help the professionals that we lead improve their practice by improving their thinking. Now that has the potential to be a little bit controversial here. So let's talk about what that means and what that looks like. If we want to change teacher practice, I believe we have to change teacher thinking. And you've no doubt seen the iceberg diagram before. I'm a big believer in this metaphor of teaching practice as an iceberg, or really any kind of professional practice as an iceberg, but we'll focus on teaching here. Whenever we get into the classroom and see a lesson, what we are seeing really is just the tip of the iceberg, right? You go into a classroom, you take notes, you see what the teacher is doing, you write down what the teacher is saying, you see what the students are doing, you look at student work, you listen to their conversations. But all of that is not all of teaching, right? That is just the visible above the surface results of the bigger work that teachers are doing behind the scenes, the kind of larger cognitive work that teachers are putting in to plan instruction and to adjust along the way and to, you know, to follow up and to make sure that students are learning not just what they're supposed to in the moment, but learning what they're supposed to over the course of the year. So much of that work happens behind the scenes, it happens outside of class, and it happens invisibly in the teacher's mind during the lesson, that I think the iceberg metaphor is apt, right? And with an iceberg, maybe about 90% of that iceberg is actually beneath the surface and only about 10% is poking up above the surface of the water. I think it's the same for teacher practice. Most of what really matters is hidden beneath the surface. It's that thinking and that planning and that decision-making. And we can only get at that cognition. We can only have a chance to understand and impact that thinking through conversation. We get there through conversation. And when we do, we can get away from what I think is something of an epidemic and a trap among instructional leaders everywhere, and what I call the epidemic of second guessing. Too often, our feedback is really just a post-mortem and kind of an armchair critique, right? Like, oh, you're watching the football game, you're sitting in your recliner, and you're watching the football game, and you're criticizing the refs, and you're criticizing the players, and you're criticizing the coaches. And of course, it's fun to do that, but it doesn't affect the game, does it, right? If you sit back in your recliner and, shout an opinion to the room about the referee and the job that the referee's doing, does that affect the game? No, not at all. Sometimes I think we fall into the same trap when it comes to our feedback conversations, though, and we have all these opinions, we express those opinions to the teacher, maybe we try to be diplomatic about it. Hopefully we try to be more diplomatic about it than when we are armchair reffing a football game. But if we're not careful, it can have results that aren't really any better, right? We can say, hey, I saw you did this. I really think you should have done that. Why didn't you use this particular strategy that I prefer? And that kind of second guessing addresses the behavior that you already saw, but it doesn't necessarily improve the teacher's thinking for the future. So I'm going to argue that if we want to improve practice, we have to do that at the level, not of just the visible behaviors, but at that deeper level of thinking and cognition. Charlotte Danielson says, teaching is cognitive work. It is intellectual work. And we have to engage intellectually and cognitively if we want to improve practice. And as a frequency kind of thing, you know, it's normal in the teacher evaluation process for there to be some sort of goal setting meeting in the fall, for there to be an observation with a pre-conference and a post-conference. Maybe you do a mid-year check-in, maybe you do a second observation cycle, and then a final check-in at the end of the year where you review the goals, you review the observations, you review your final rating and sign all the paperwork. But I want to suggest a number to you, a specific number of conversations that I want to challenge you to have in the coming year. No matter what getting into classrooms looks like, I want to challenge you to have 500 conversations about practice in the coming year with the teachers that you work with. Because only through those conversations are you going to be able to get at the thinking that is behind the teaching and learning that happens in the classroom or virtually or wherever that's happening. Only by talking about thinking can we change practice. So let me give you two specific places to focus as you have those conversations. Number one, we can raise the level of teachers' thinking. We can improve cognition by improving teachers' ability to see cause and effect. And I call the different strategies for helping teachers see cause and effect learning dynamics. And we talk about that in module 4 of the High Performance Instructional Leadership Certification. We're not going to go into all four of them, but one of the learning dynamics is a delayed reaction. Okay, so if you want to help teachers understand cause and effect and what's happening in their classrooms that they may be missing in the moment, one of the ways that you can be useful as a feedback provider, but also as a thinking partner, is to say, hey, here's what I saw happening. Students were doing this, you said that, and then a few minutes later, here's what happened. Like maybe as the instructional leader who wasn't having to teach the lesson in the moment, you got around and were looking at students' work and you saw what students were doing on paper as a result of their thinking, as a result of something that happened several minutes prior, and the teacher just wasn't able to see that connection because they were busy with everything that was going on in the lesson. Being able to see delayed reactions and being able to look for delayed reactions and gather evidence based on those delayed reactions can be a huge influencer of teachers' thinking. So I'll just give you that one learning dynamic today. The second way we can raise the level of teachers' thinking is by providing more specific vocabulary in the format of our instructional framework or a rubric. When you have very specific leveled rubrics describing what practice looks like, you can actually raise the level of people's thinking, because often what's holding people back in their thinking is not that they don't have good ideas, but it's that the vocabulary for talking about practice and distinguishing between, you know, okay and good and great practice is not specific enough. So one of the things I truly love about rubrics and why I'm so passionate about rubrics, why rubrics are a big part of the instructional vision project that I'm working on in the coming year, is that rubrics provide that specificity that we so desperately need in order to have practice changing feedback conversations. So that is what I have for you today. My challenge to you with, you know, whatever is coming in the next year, don't worry so much about getting into classrooms 500 times. If, you know, if school is closed, if school is out for the summer, if school is reopening virtually, don't worry so much about the fact that you can't do classroom walkthroughs. Instead, I want to challenge you and encourage you to focus on having 500 conversations about practice in the coming year. And the two specific things we talked about today were, number one, clearer cause and effect thinking. So, you know, helping teachers see the patterns in what they're doing and the impact that it's having on learning. And number two, more specific vocabulary for specific areas of practice using rubrics. And if you are part of our programs that we offer at the Principal Center, you probably have access to the Instructional Framework Development Program, which is all about developing those rubrics. So if you're a member and you need a link to that, let me know and we'll get that to you. That is it for today. This has been episode 58 of the Instructional Leadership Show, Becoming a Conversation and Thought Partner to Teachers. Take care.